those magnificent men in their flying machine. They go up to the up-up, they go down to the up-down. They enchant all the ladies and steal all the scene. Live there up to the up-up, and then down to the up-down. Up, down, flying around, looping the loop and defying the ground. They're all rightfully keen, those magnificent men in their flying machines.
Hello and welcome to the pilot episode of Something Something Spaceships, a podcast aiming to celebrate and commentate on sci-fi games, mostly, but not exclusively, the epic massively multiplayer game EVE Online. I'm Matt Westhorpe, known in EVE Online circles as Seismic Stan. This episode of Something Something Spaceships, subtitled Communities, Documentaries and Spaceships, is really just to kick things off, check my mic is working, that I'm able to string a coherent sentence together, and to get the ball rolling what I hope will be an enjoyable audio interlude. The ongoing plan for Something Something Spaceships is for me to be joined on each episode by a guest host. Hopefully this format will keep things fresh as I discuss assorted themes and topics of the day, as well as chat about subjects tailored to the guest host's interests. So let's see how it goes. Journalist, veteran podcaster and now documentarian Petter Martinsson has kindly joined me to talk about this edition's theme, Internet Spaceship Communities. Welcome, Petter.
Thank you very much.
So, Internet Spaceship Communities.
Mm-hmm.
You're in one.
I guess I am. As I like to call myself, I'm probably the biggest noob in all of New Eden with the most amount of skill points.
I don't think that's true at all. I've been playing it for 11 years and I think I qualify as well. Perhaps we should talk about EVE, the format of the show being that the first segment will be all about EVE. So, this segues nicely into that. What is EVE? How do we define it?
Earth. The origin of our ancestors. A century had passed since they discovered the EVE Gate. A wormhole. Passage to a remote corner of the universe. New Eden. It was the largest colonization effort in the history of man. The mass settlement of hundreds of strange new worlds. We thought nothing could stop us.
We're going to talk about later, obviously, is the fact that I'm one of the guys behind a documentary about EVE Online, and we had so much problems with this question, trying to define it, so it's
really hard. So you're the perfect man for the job. You've given this some thought.
Given it some thought, we've been trying to condense, you know, what is EVE Online what is EVE Online? It's, at its core, it's an online role-playing game about spaceships shooting other spaceships.
Right. EVE's sort of unique angle is the community-driven aspect, isn't it?
Yes, this is when it gets complicated.
Because as long-time players, we kind of we interface with other EVE players without necessarily playing EVE. So it's got this whole community aspect that's transcended the core game. But that doesn't really explain it to people that are coming along for the first time. EVE, the game, is spaceship. Spaceship combat, spaceship society.
Yeah, it's politics, it's territorial control, it's industry, it's shitposting on the forums, it's backstabbing and heisting and friendship and all of this in a huge galaxy where people are basically free to do whatever they want to do.
And from our point of view, the truth of it is, as casual EVE players, I think it's fair to say that we're not really involved in any of the grand machinations of that people often read about. But you are to an extent, aren't you? You're associated with a particular player faction within EVE Online, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
And
I am, but I hardly ever play. So I'm not sure.
Yes, you kicked it.
Yeah. I changed my skills. I mean, I'm theoretically available. But so, yeah.
So when you do log on, do you you get involved in the combat, or do you do the player versus environment content? Do you explore?
Currently, I don't. When I log in these days, I actually just do it to change skills, which is basically, if we're gonna explain this for people who don't play, it's that if you play another game, you usually gain levels. The more monsters you kill, the more powerful you become. In EVE Online, you gain skills over time. So you can say that, okay, I want to learn how to use this particular weapon, for example, and then you start learning that, and over time you get better. Like, you get...
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because rather than it being something that involves a lot of grind to get to the next level that unlocks new things, and then a lot of grind to get to the next level that unlocks more new things, you've instead got a time-based thing. So you don't actually have to be doing the grind, and it's not an upward escalation of ability either. It's more of a sideways thing. It's specialization is the key thing. So you can, within a few days, be very capable of doing one thing. And the more you play EVE, the more you specialize those skills, you can be very capable of doing numerous things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Which sets it aside from many of the more traditional, what I like to call Gygaxian game design, as in Gary Gygax, Dungeons and Dragons. You're a level one halfling. Now you're a level two halfling. You can, I find that a little bit restrictive. Because you kind of set yourself on a path, don't you, that you just cannot avoid after that.
Yeah, and EVE as well, the main thing here as well is that you can go and do other things. While you're training a skill passively, you can go and do other things. While in most of the games, if I want to become more powerful, the only thing I can do, really, is follow this vertical kind of power curve. You go upwards and upwards and upwards, and that's the only thing you can do. I mean, in World of Warcraft, if you're going to become max level, all you're going to do is just kill things until you get enough experience points, until you finally reach that point. Well, in EVE, I can set a skill to learn to use a gun, and then I'll just go and do stuff completely unrelated to what I'm actually training and having a really good time, and then all of a sudden, I can use some other guns, and that's great. But you don't have to focus the power curve, and the learning and becoming more powerful is not really related to what you're actually doing in, which is really nice.
That's almost the what I find so daunting when I log in. I'm like, right, what am I going to do this time? And because I've played for long enough to have advanced sideways and got all the specializations, I can, in theory, pretty much do anything in the game now, but I don't actually have the experience, so I'm like, I better not do that, I'll just lose money. But, I find, for me, the charm of EVE is that freedom. It's the, when I say I don't play in a traditional sense, in that I'm not part of an alliance, I'm not part of some big push to take space or to fight faction warfare or whatever. The PvP side of it, which is what EVE is touted as, doesn't always appeal to me. It takes a lot of work and research, and sometimes, most of the time, I log into EVE to relax, because it's a beautiful game environment. It's just, I find it quite, the art is stunning. It was when it came out in 2003, and still today, they've completely reinvented so many aspects of it. I mean, ships keep getting redesigned. They keep adding more ships. The planets and the starscapes and the nebulae, they look beautiful. And I can quite happily while away an hour or two just bimbling around and looking at stuff and doing flybys and playing with my camera angles. But I don't think that I'm a large part of the core audience by doing that.
I think you are. That's the thing. I think a lot of people are just doing that. I was looking through old folders, looking at you talked about the game like 10 years ago, and looking through an old folder of screenshots from 2006, 2007. And already back then, I mean, it was a beautiful game. you'd think you thought back then.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We look at those screenshots now, and it looks horrible. But the background, you know, the nebulae and everything, what they've done with them over the last couple of years, and the kind of actual science that's gone into creating this atmosphere and these environments, just fabulous.
Yeah, because you'd be forgiven for thinking that those nebulae are just a skybox and it's the same wherever you go. But it's not, is it? It changes with every system you're in. Each system is actually plotted as one of the stars that you can see. And the whole starscape and the background shifts according to your position within the New Eden star cluster, which is...
When did they add that? That when you plot around on the map?
I'd have to look it up. If I had to have a punt, I'd say round about Inferno-ish, 2012, 2013. It's been fairly recent. It's been...
Because that is amazing.
Yeah.
You can see, you plot the route on your map, and you've got the map, and you're flying in space, and you can actually see the stars... which stars you'll be visiting. It's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, that's...
And it's such a pointless thing, in a sense. I mean, it doesn't actually do anything mechanically for the game. It's just, you know it's there.
That's probably the question I should have started with at the top. What is the point of Eve? You know, it's a sandbox. We haven't even covered that. The fact is that you're not railroaded into doing anything. There are social and cultural pressures from the players. Oh, you know, you're doing it wrong. Elitism is something that I've always found mildly irritating. Oh, you're fitting your shit wrong. You're doing this wrong. It's a sandbox. You can't do it wrong. And I think that's the beauty of it. In fact, I trade on doing it wrong. If I'm doing it right, I'm conforming, and I've never been one to conform much. So, yeah, it's... I mean, I don't avoid PvP per se. I like that it's there. I like the threat that it presents. I think that's... Eve, for me, is one of the games where the massively multiplayer concept really does work, because it doesn't matter whether you want the other people in the game. They're there, and they present... They have a presence... Mm-hmm. And I think that is different to a lot of MMOs, where you could almost strip the other players out and it would make no difference. Take what you like from that. That's if that made any sense, brilliant. If not, I know, look it up on the wiki. The next segment is Eve headlines. We'll look at the main things that have happened in and around Eve recently. The first of which would be the new release of Chronos, The Rise of Pirates, which is the latest... We're not using the word expansion anymore. They've changed from twice-yearly expansions to multiple releases on a roughly six-week recurring strategy. Yeah, and so the first one is Chronos. Have you had a chance to dip into this at all yet, Petter?
No, I patched up, logged in, changed the skill, and then logged out.
Why did I invite you on?
That was actually right before Chronos. I'm sorry, I haven't logged in since. I logged in. I was taking some footage for the documentary, so I logged in, and it said 30 minutes until the service goes down for Chronos. That was my experience of Chronos. So.
the install experience. Well, I mean the. To give a brief overview, it's they're focusing on from a... I love the storyline. I think Eve has got a rich and interesting science fiction storyline, and this particular one is it's focusing on the pirate factions. Although across Eve, certainly when you start in the protected empire space, which is largely reviled by the veteran players, but it's a nice cozy home from home for those that are a little bit risk averse. But it's run by, or it's protected by Concord, which is the police force, and then four empires, the Minmatar, the Amar, the Kaldari, and the Galenti, who all tend to like or not like each other and blow each other up a lot. But that's the space that the core worlds operate within. But then beyond that, there are these fringe organizations, which are, they include some of the sort of the most well-known ones, like Sanctia's Nation, which are a Borg-like race that constantly do these incursions around all areas of known space. There's the Angel Cartel, which are basically a criminal organization, Serpentis, and the Grishnas. They all have their own specialist ships, but they've been in game for a long time. Recently, CCP has started to introduce ships for other factions, pirate factions, that exist in the game but have never had their own fleet of ships before. We've seen recently the Sisters of Eve delivered some interesting, very white, shiny, Star Wars-esque exploration ships. And now, most recently, we've got Mordu's Legion, who are some military separatists that they basically combine elements from two of the main factions that I mentioned earlier, Galenti and Kaldari. So what we've got are these very sleek new ships that have kind of got a US military battleship kind of look about them, but their key flavour is speed and missiles. And and also being ridiculously expensive in game at the moment. Like any new thing that's introduced, it's hot property, so the people that are capable of making them, because everything in EVE is made by other players, the few people that do make them can pretty much pick their price to start with. But yeah, so the three ships, which are the vanguard of this Mordu's Legion faction, is the Gamma, which is the frigate, the Orthrus, which I think is the cruiser, and the Barghest, which is the strange spatula-shaped battleship.
One is really odd.
It is. It's the Barghest. I mean, reading through people's opinions, the aesthetic value of them is kind of it's dividing people. Some people think they're hilarious. Others think they're beautiful. Where do you sit?
I think the Garmer looks really good. I'm not that. I'm fairly neutral to the Orthrus, and the Barghest looks like crap.
It does look.
I don't know. Or crap. It looks odd.
I read somebody describing it as a rattlesnake that's been run over by a steamroller. It does just look like a flat rattlesnake. You have to, obviously, there's a bit of inside knowledge. You'll have to know what a rattlesnake looks like first. But yeah, it's been squished. But I don't know. I played around with them on the Singularity test server before the patch went live. Sorry, the release. And they do look good. Especially, they've started to do this, put more animation into them. When you go into and come out of warp, things deploy and slide and shift, and there's kind of a bit of a Transformers element to the ships. And these three models certainly take full advantage of that, especially the Orthrus. It's got those weird flappy bits at the front that kind of slide, rotate and twist as it deploys into warp and out again. They do look... that makes them better. It kind of makes sense of some of the slightly odder elements to the design, but they are all very flat. So yeah, that's the thing that they're leading with on the Kronos patch. But there's been a lot of other stuff as well. Interestingly, and possibly controversially, the New Eden store, they've kind of relaunched what was the next store, now with ship skins, which. Well, previously they've not had a great track record of the kind of microtransaction policy that they've tried to employ before. Any thoughts on that? Have you seen it?
No, I haven't, obviously. But I remember the dev blog when they introduced it and introduced the new ship skins. I love, and a lot of people caught this fairly quickly, is the amount of times in that dev blog that they mentioned that you can actually buy this stuff for in-game currency, or you can buy Plex for ISK, and then you can turn that into Aurum and then buy, and you don't have to buy this for real money. They're really, like,
You can do this with in-game assets. Don't worry. You don't have to pay anything. You can buy it with ARM and Flex or whatever. But remember, you can buy this with ISK. Really just hammering it that down. I can understand that because last time it didn't go so well.
Yeah. People were... The community, which I'd like to get onto in a bit, is... they're a lively bunch. But, yeah, so the New Eden store. The one interesting thing I think we'll have to see how it goes and how it's received is the thing with these microtransaction things, which are only a visual element. There's no gameplay advantage to having these new ship skins. But given the cost of them, everything in EVE is perishable. You know, like you can buy it, you pay a not insignificant amount for a paint job. And these ships are, if you're going to use them, get blown up. Especially if you're a PvP'er, which a lot of people are. Yeah. Is there a market? Are people going to bother to skin ships for PvP? It's an interesting one to see. I don't know if their price points are quite right. You know, would you be prepared to pay very much for something that you're potentially going to lose in the next couple of minutes and never be able to use again? Who knows? Anyway, yeah, so there's that and many more things in Kronos. There's some new exploration sites, and there's lots of little tweaks and quality of life things, which, given that EVE is, as we said before, 11 years old now, it's in need of constant polish and tweaking in order to kind of keep up with the Joneses. But they're managing it in certain aspects of the UI. That covers the first bit of the EVE headlines. The second bit, which we can't really avoid, is the elephant in the room, are the layoffs. EVE Online studio CCP Games lays off 49 employees, reports PC Gamer, and many others. So I suppose, I mean, it's sad, because many of the people that, once you're part of the EVE community for a while, these folk become... people, rather than just random. That might sound odd, but you kind of empathise with them, and you know, like, there are people that I have met and I've drunk with that they've lost their jobs, and this, it is sad. My heart does go out to them. But the question that does, I think, spring certainly into my mind and into the minds of others is: are CCP's recent upheavals a sign of EVE Online's dwindling fortunes, or is it just preparation for a new era as sci-fi gaming enjoys a renaissance? Because we're seeing lots of other sci-fi games, which previously were a bit of the unwanted stepchild of the games industry, space sims and the like. We're now looking at a games environment where you've got Elite Dangerous, you've got Star Citizen, and then you've got the more tactical stuff. There's plenty of 4X and RTS type things coming along. Even the real-time shooters are going sci-fi again now. They've got bored of World War II and modern day, and we're looking at your Planet Sides and your Titanfalls, and sci-fi is kind of a thing now. So yeah, what do you think, Petter? Is EVE Online's current changing fortunes a good thing, or are we looking down the barrel?
The thing with these layoffs, as you say, it's incredibly sad. And there's been a lot of that, both recently and through CCP fairly recent history, going back to the Incarna incident. When after that, 20% of people of the people at CCP lost their jobs, and then we had the shuttering of the World of Darkness, the other game they were working on just a couple of weeks ago, where I don't know how many people have their jobs there, like 50 plus something.
Mm, it's a similar number, yeah. They've laid off in the region of 100 people over the last few weeks, yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, what CCP probably needs to do, and now, of course, now we're talking line members. This is it's a firing range. This is tricky going into. Because I'm not 100% sure exactly who all these people are. There's mostly from publishing and marketing and stuff like that. Community, right?
Yeah, I mean, the phrase they used in the press release was it was mostly people from, quote, publishing, unquote. But that seems like a fairly woolly definition, given that we've seen people that, certainly in the community team, we've seen CCP ex-Hagen, who is a bit of a CCP legend. You know, he received his sword for 10 years of service at FanFest 2013. He's a big fella that looks like Zangief. They dropped him from the sky at the latest FanFest to ultimately get beaten up by a professional mixed martial arts guy. But, you know, they recently published a dev blog focusing on him. And, you know, his job was, I think he's an associate producer.
I just realized who he was. Oh, man, they let him go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, that was the big shocker. But then also CCP Loxy, Oliver Nicholson, who's the video guy, basically. You know, he masterminded EVE TV and the Alliance tournaments. CCP Etern gained some popularity as a lore hound and kind of the public face of the fiction element of EVE. And, yeah, it always seems to be the guys that we know that get the bullet. I remember back when the 20% got laid off, I suppose we wouldn't know that there's 100 people that have been laid off. So I'm talking about three. Undoubtedly, there are people, there are backroom staff that we don't know that have gone as well. But it's the ones that you do know that hurt, I think. And it's it speaks to the unique relationship that I think EVE players have with EVE Online and CCP games, in that it feels personal. It feels like, I don't know, you want to have a whip round or you can understand why people get quite militant and get the pitchforks and torches out, because you kind of feel compelled to do something. This doesn't feel right. But ultimately, it's there are rumblings that it was an investor-led pressure that led to this. It's a sad business. Question I wanted to ask you was, given your greater experience with other MMOs, is this kind of relationship that EVE players have with CCP games, is it unique? Do you have that kind of level of interaction within other MMOs? In your experience?
Not in the bigger ones, not to the same degree. I mean, CCP has really managed to create a cult of personality around some of their staff. And you have FanFest, for example, which is very, very personal for CCP. I mean, other companies, SOE and Blizzard, both have their own kind of, their own FanFest variants, SOE Live and BlizzCon. But it's still, I'm guessing it comes down to the way that EVE Online is played, the kind of the personal investment you get in this game compared to other MMOs. That changes the entire dynamic, which drags when there's so much politics and so much hangs in the balance all the time. You change the balance of a ship and the meta might be completely changed and doctrines might be changed. For tens of thousands of players in completely different ways, like rebalancing a bit of a class in another MMO. And so the CCP themselves tends to get dragged into the metagame of EVE Online.
Yeah, I suppose that's what it is.
And that's definitely what we saw during Incarna, for example, and T20 and stuff like that. And so, no, we don't know. I mean, people might know, the developers know of them, know the games as well, especially in smaller communities, you have a very close relationship, but it's nothing compared to what it is like in EVE Online and CCP. So, it's unique, definitely.
Mm.
Just the way that, but yeah, the love and the hate between them, between the community and CCP, it's quite fascinating to see in general. Yeah, and I'm almost plugging my film now.
Let's move on to the next feature, Webbed, a tale of internet spaceships. We've mentioned Incarna a couple of times in the last few minutes, and some people might be going, well, what's the relevance of that? Do you want to tell us about a tale of internet spaceships?
A tale of internet spaceship is a documentary about EVE Online that me and two of my dear friends, Philip Reibander and Ellen Tedin, Swedish names, I'm so sorry, are working on. And basically, what we set out to do was what we were talking about before, the community versus CCP, or community, the kind of the relationship between the community and CCP.
what we set out to do was to make a movie about how that relationship could look, and kind of ask this question that how, just looking at it, what, how does it actually work, and what kind of situations can come up in this kind of weird relationship between the two. What we've done, and of course we talked about the Inkarna incident before, and the Inkarna and all the stuff that happened. Inkarna was an expansion released for EVE Online in 2011, which introduced a walking, what had been promised for, I think, 5 or 6 years, was be able to walk in stations.
Which was the thing that, in 2008-ish, I think, myself and my friends came back because of the rumblings around that. So yeah, it's certainly got a draw for some people, the idea of being able to disembark.
Most definitely. And that went to, it went to hell in a handbasket, basically. it wasn't a pretty time, and there was a lot of anger from the player base, and there were virtual riots, and all this stuff just happening in a very short span of time. Everything just went absolutely insane around EVE Online, as it seems
to be. And the tale of Internet Spaceships gets under the skin of that, right? That's what you, I mean, well, Ellen and Philip didn't really have a context for that, did they? So you kind of explored the setup of EVE Online community prior to that as well, didn't you? Before you got under the skin of Inkarna.
Yeah, we have to introduce, like, what is, as I was talking about before as well, what is EVE Online, who are CCP, the community, how come they feel the way they do, how come people love this game and play this game in the way they do. Because Aelin and Philip, they came in having no idea about EVE Online in general. I mean, I pitched the idea to Philip, and this is what I want to make a movie about, and he was on board from the get go, and then we brought Ellen in because she's awesome, and they had to learn a lot about EVE Online. They had to they've never sat down and actually played the game, because it's not one of those games that you can actually just here's my character in World of Warcraft, go kill that dragon over there.
Yeah,
Online is not that kind of game.
Are they gamers though? I mean, they have
Philip is.
Right.
Philip plays a lot of game. Ellen really isn't. But so it was fun to bring. We went to FanFest last year, FanFest 2013, for the 10th anniversary, and recorded all. I think we came home with like 35 hours of video material to zip through, and they came to EVE Online from the community.
How many hours of that was Hans Jägerblitzen? Because I know he can talk.
Oh man, can that guy talk? Wow, yeah. He never stops talking, that's the thing.
Yeah, 30 hours of that footage was him.
behind the scenes exclusive, editing Hans Jägerblitzen's interview is interesting, because he never stops talking, and sure, a lot of the people we interviewed love to talk, but he never seems to stop for breath.
But it's good stuff. I've interviewed him before. It's very cogent and well structured. It's
absolutely, it's fantastic stuff. And the stuff we have in the movie, I think, it is great stuff. And he said so many good things. But you can't cut it up into small pieces.
So who else is in the movie? Are there other people that you can tell us about?
Just mention a few. There's quite a lot of them. We can mention a few. But of course, the CSM members that were on the Council of Stellar Management at the time, Trevor, then the Mitanni, Celine, Hans, Two-Step.
I suppose we need to frame that a little bit. The CSM being the Council of Stellar Management, which is the player-elected representative body that on a yearly basis, that they take up a yearly term to become player liaisons to CCP, even travelling out a couple of times a year to under non-disclosure agreements to help CCP get a better handle on what the players want and what might be well received and that kind of thing.
We interviewed a lot of people over the course of 3 days.
And CCP staff as well?
Yeah, yeah. People like Hilmar, CEO, and CCP Zulu, John Lander, Dolan,
Soundwave, people like that.
Chris Toberg.
And yeah, Chris Toberg, exactly.
Most of whom aren't there anymore.
No.
They're all at Riot Games now.
Funnily enough. But yeah, we interviewed a lot of people who sadly won't be in the movie. I mean, we have a lot of, only name I can think of the top of my head right now is C3P Falcon. When I was listening to C3P people, but we did a lot of interviews with people who sadly won't be in the film. That's one thing we learned fairly quickly. Was one of the advice we got was that when you're putting together a documentary, the hard part isn't gathering all the material. The hard part is cutting away material.
Mm.
So a lot of people that we thought we had, like, this is an awesome interview, we're so happy we did this one, and when we put everything together, just realized that it's completely superfluous and it doesn't fit into the movie. So sadly, we ended up with a lot of that stuff on the cutting floor.
How are you going to be releasing the film? Is there a possibility for DVD extras?
We're going to release it online for free on YouTube, Vimeo, and hopefully we'll manage to sort out how the hell you put up a torrent. I don't know how to do that. But we're going to try to get it onto the major torrent sites as well. And we're going to have a party.
It's going to be exciting. Oh, a party? What, a physical, yeah, real party?
There will be a physical live premiere. But that was going to be in Malmö, Sweden. But yeah, that's going to be, and it's going to be, let's just say soon now. It's very soon. We'll have an announcement very soon.
Soon measured in.
I'm not going to say even soon trademark. I'm going to say, I'm not going to say soon trademark. I'm just going to say soon.
This summer?
Yeah. Yeah, but we really wanted to get it out before FanFest. And that's also one of those things I can say officially. And we put this, is that we were offered by CCP to come and show the movie at FanFest. But sadly, we couldn't make it in time. We had to make a decision. And sadly, we knew we wouldn't be able to produce as good quality as we wanted to.
So,
we had pressure. But this summer, absolutely, absolutely, without a doubt.
This party, how big a party are we talking? I mean, have you got a cinema booked, or is it a pub? Is it a hotel? Is it your back garden?
The venue, we're allowed to bring in 300 people, but I doubt we're going to have 300 people there. But it's a fairly big venue. So.
Is it close to a pub that can also accommodate the same number of people? Because this is an Eve-based thing, there'll be a cultural requirement for alcohol, probably before two, but also afterwards.
Who knows? we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'll book my ticket now. As soon as you tell me the date.
You should.
I need a date.
You'll get a date soon.
Thank you. Okay. Is there anything else that you can tell us about the sale of internet spaceships, or is that the rest of it a closely guarded secret?
I think I'm going to hold most of it close to my heart right now when it comes to what's actually in the movie and the kind of questions we ask.
Keep your powder dry. Good call.
Yeah.
Good luck with it. I'm very excited about it, to be honest. It's not like I don't know anything about it, and it's I think it's going to be something that will be remembered. It's a surprisingly powerful piece, and I think it's an amazing bit of filmmaking. The next feature, the part that you've been looking forward to, I'm sure, is what I've a little thing. What I'd like to do over the course of this podcast series, as I have different co-hosts on, I'd like to fire 10 questions at each of them that will be tailored for what I think is kind of things they might know about, and we'll have a little scoreboard running over the course of the season. I've totally stolen this idea from Top Gear, I have to be completely honest. But yeah, so, a little bit from Empire magazine as well. They used to a feature like that with people that they interviewed. But yeah, so Petter, as a journalist, documentarian, general sci-fi, MMO and gaming nerd... Given that this is the first episode of Something Something Spaceships, this is the beginning, so the theme of these 10 questions is beginnings.
I'm slightly worried about this. I'm going to come out of this one looking looking good.
I reckon as long as you get 5 or 6 out of 10, there's, you know, like you.
Oh man, a 3.
Now that would be embarrassing. Anyway, we'll see how we go. You ready for your first question?
Sure.
Do it. Question 1. It's widely known that the first successful moon landing took place in 1969. But in what year did the first man-made object, Sputnik 1, successfully orbit the Earth, triggering the space race?
Oh. What could have been?
I'll give you a clue. It was before 1969.
Why, thank you. I'm just trying to figure out if it was early 60s or late 50s.
No pressure. This is a podcast. This is dead air.
Well, it's before JFK died.
Which was, what, 63?
62.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah. So, I don't know. 1950.
Ooh. You're going... Mm-hmm. Oh, come on, pick a number. You've got one.
1958.
Oh, so close. 1957.
Oh, man.
It was a noble effort. I could give you a point, but I won't. So, question 2. What recently relaunched TV documentary show aimed at popularising science and space was originally hosted by renowned astrophysicist Carl Sagan?
I haven't seen anyone. I actually haven't seen the old one. Kind of, we didn't grow up with Carl Sagan in Sweden.
No, it's a bit of an American thing. Yeah, Cosmos, as you said, is the right answer, and it's been doing the rounds certainly on UK TV somewhere, but I haven't actually seen it yet. It's just on my I need to find it. I want to see it. But yeah, the original was in 1980, which was hosted by Carl Sagan. Cosmos: A Personal Journey, which was based on a book he wrote called Cosmos, and then they relaunched it this year with Neil deGrasse Tyson, called Cosmos: A Space-Time Odyssey. So, yeah, you got that. 1 point out of 2. Question 3. In the iconic scene in 2001 A Space Odyssey, which sees a bone hurled by a man-ape match-cut into a spaceship, what animal did the bone come from, according to a threatening letter written by director Stanley Kubrick, which has recently been doing the rounds on the internet?
Oh, that letter. That was fun. Is it a donkey?
No, it's not a donkey. Go on, have another punt.
Oh, I saw that letter earlier today.
Stop browsing the internet, that's cheating.
No, don't worry.
I think the phrase was, he was bemoaning the fact that they were talking about making a sequel, and he said that, "I know I can't do anything legally, so I'm advised, but I want you to know that I still have this particular bone from this particular animal, and I will shove it so far up your arse you'll need alien intervention to get it out again." Or words to that effect.
Right.
And he does mention the animal from which it comes.
I can't remember.
It's a tapir.
Oh.
1 out of 3. Sorry, mate. Question 4. Oh, we're into a more comfortable realm for you now. In 1962, the world's first game, a two-player science fiction deathmatch involving two spaceships and a central star, was created by Steve Slug Russell and others. What was it called?
Space Wars.
Yeah, Space Wars. Question 5. What genre of game is coastal magician Richard Garfield accredited with having invented in 1993?
Which one?
What genre of game?
Richard Garfield.
Yeah.
That is Lord British. I mean, role-playing games.
No, that's Richard Garriott.
Oh, Richard Garfield. Of course. Sorry. Elite. The Dangerous.
No, that's David Braben.
God! Everything is going to crap now.
Richard Garfield is, to be honest, until I stumbled across the article, I'd never heard of him. But... yeah, the clue's in the question, though. What genre of game is coastal magician Richard Garfield accredited with having invented in 1993?
1993?
The entire genre.
Hang on. Richard Garfield.
Mm-hmm. Stop Googling him.
No.
Gonna have to hurry you. If it takes more than 10 seconds, then your Google foo is rubbish, and you don't get any points.
No. Okay, so we have Richard Braben.
No, David Braben.
David Braben
is elite, along with Ian Bell. Richard Lord British Garriott is the fella behind Ultima, and Richard Garfield is this other guy. So, yeah. have you read him on Wikipedia yet?
No, I haven't. No, it's really annoying.
I want a genre, and it's not necessarily of a digital nature.
Oh. Hang on, Richard Garfield.
Yes, you've said that a lot. That's the question, not the answer.
No.
He invented, if you like, collectible card games.
Oh, he did Magic the Gathering.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Ah, crap.
Hence,
right now I remember.
Okay, so that's how many points are you up to? I think you've still just got the 2 at the moment. Out of 5 so far. So it's,
crap.
You know, that's right, you can still get 7. Okay, question 6. What poorly translated phrase from the opening sequence of Japanese 1990 shoot-em-up Zero Wing went on to become a popular internet meme?
All your base are belong to us.
Nice one.
That was a bit too easy, though.
Well, I knew you'd struggle with the others. I had to give you a couple of easy ones. Question 7. According to various sources, what 3 games were the inspiration for EVE Online?
Magic the Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
Elite.
Mm-hmm.
Crap, what's the last one?
It helps that we've mentioned them all already.
Yeah. Can I look up in the script for the film?
No!
In there? Ultima Online.
Yes. Yeah. Nice one. Elite, Ultima Online, and Magic the Gathering. Elite, obviously, spaceships and trading. Ultima Online for the progression system and the vicious PvP. And Magic the Gathering for collectible ship-fitting kind of concept. Okay, question 8. When the MMO Star Wars Galaxies and Empire Divided was launched on the 26th of June 2003, what 6 basic professions were available to the new player?
Oh, you're kidding me.
Oh, come on, this is your favourite MMO, you've told me.
But I didn't, actually the terrible thing is I didn't start playing Star Wars Galaxies until 2.5 years before the shutdown, so it's well...
reverse engineer your knowledge then, aren't you?
Yeah.
Know this.
They'd already been removed by that time during the combat update and the new game announcements. Rifleman, entertainer.
Rifleman isn't, entertainer is. Alright, I'll give you rifleman. You mean, I've got marksman.
I've been playing the Star Wars Galaxies emulator a bit, and they have the original ones in, but the only thing I've been doing there is playing my entertainer, so. I'm sorry, I'm completely...
I will give you half a point if you can get 3. Done entertainer and marksman. Give me 1 more and you can have half a point.
Did they have that animal handler thing in at the time? Not when it was released, I'm guessing.
Not, but... No, in fact, the article I read said that they hadn't implemented mounts, beasts, and... No, spaceships when it first went live.
I'm sorry, I don't know this one.
I thought it was going to be an automatic point for you on a Star Wars Galaxy questions.
Wrong side of history on that one.
Sorry. Medic, brawler, marksman, scout, entertainer, and artisan.
Medic. An artisan. Yeah, I'm an idiot.
Okay. Question 9. Now, if I can't go more home for you than this next question... So, on your blog, Don't Fear the Mutant, the very first entry was made on February the 9th, 2009. What game was giving you the blues?
2009, that's my old version of my blog, right?
Yeah, probably.
This is one that actually says blog, not Don't Fear the Mutant. What gave you the blues? Probably EVE Online.
No, it was mentioned in the post, but it wasn't the core focus of your complaint.
Giving me the blues.
Yeah, well, the I'll give you a clue. The title of the blog post was Patch Day Blues. And you actually cite EVE Online as a game that doesn't give you this particular problem that you were complaining about. But the game that you were playing at the time was. At one point, I think you downloaded minus 500% of it.
Lord of the Rings Online?
Oh, I knew that was too much of a clue. Yes.
That was a fun bug.
Ended up with less Lord of the Rings Online than you started with. Okay, so that gives you, how many? One, two, three.
I want to do over.
Five. You've got five so far, and you've got another question.
Oh,
one more question. Yeah, so you can, I think six. I said six or seven out of ten would be reasonable. And this is an easy one. Upcoming crowd-funded space sim Star Citizen originally had a target budget of $20 million. As of this week, how much have they now raised?
How the hell, how much? They keep just raising money. Did they update this week as well?
On the 30th of May, I believe, was their last.
Oh. I'm just going to have to, I don't know, 55 million?
No, not quite that much. 45 million. A paltry 45 million.
Yeah.
That's a fair effort. 5 out of 10.
I'm coming back. At some point.
To be honest, you are my guinea pig. I kind of got to gauge how broad, difficult, cryptic these questions need to be for the guests.
And the worst part is they weren't very cryptic or weird or anything. So I'm feeling kind of ashamed. That's
well, it's always nice to shame someone publicly. So, next segment is the Flash Fiction Competition. So, this is something that I'm probably going to regret, but in the past, I've dabbled with audio fiction, giving material written by myself and others the audio treatment from short stories. The technicians were now applying an assortment of heat torches and laser cutters as they whittled away at the frozen amniotic fluid and shattered capsule wreckage. In satirical skits,
long have ships in space languished, falling ever farther from balance while your minions sop the bright gold of microtransactions at your behest. At this, fair-haired Hilmar grew wroth and smote the arm of his throne, saying,
"What doth these knaves think $14.95 a month buyeth them?"
It's a full-blown episodic radio drama.
Tengu class strategic cruiser, we're buggered.
Stasis field and warp disruption in progress. Missiles inbound.
Correction, we're completely buggered.
Oh, shut up, Wesley. Lock and fire at will. Deploy the combat drone. Helm, burn away. Evacuate the civilians. Now!
Wait, what?
Someone get this reporter off my bridge.
One of which I believe you helped me with, Petter. At one point, you played the role of an interviewee on a space station.
Oh, I did. That was my...
And this...
Seconds of fame.
Yeah, this is an excerpt. That particular excerpt, I'll play it right now.
What? No! Oh, dear.
I'm with Corbin Escala, a maintenance worker and civil rights campaigner here on the station. Mr. Escala, please, tell us about your brother.
Well, my brother, he worked as a loader on board cargo haulers, and he was delivering some supplies to some independent dead space colony out in Riddingjord. And that's when the colony was attacked and destroyed by a captured near battleship. Hundreds of people died, including my brother.
If it was bad, I blame the script. I totally blame the script.
As an experiment, I'd like to announce a Flash Fiction competition, with all entries being published on my freebooted blog, and the top three getting 100 million isk each, and the winner getting recorded for a broadcast on the next episode of Something Something Spaceships. So, if you're interested in taking part, I'm looking for short pieces of 500 words or less, which would work well as an audio piece. As I'm hoping to keep this initiative fairly modest, at least to begin with, please try and keep it simple. Narrative or dialogue-led materials, both fine, and sound effects aren't a barrier, but don't go nuts, because I've only got a certain amount of time to get this together before the next episode. So, bear in mind, the more characters that you have involved, the more challenging it would be to organise too. We'll keep the theme broad this time, so whatever floats your space boat, just as long as it's EVE Online themed. If you could email entries to seismic.stan@gmail.com with the title Something Something Spaceships Flash Fiction Competition, and the closing date will be Sunday the 22nd of June 2014. I'll write something on my blog to lay out the info here, but yeah, I look forward to this competition being completely ignored by everyone. And on to the next segment, Beyond New Eden. Given that I'd like to talk about other spaceship-based games, this is the place to do it, really. We've touched on them. In particular, I thought it'd be nice to look back at Star Wars Galaxies, since I know Petta is so fond of it. So, Petta, Star Wars Galaxies, what made it so unique that it's your favourite MMO?
I used to do this podcast called The Three MMOsketeers, which is still running, but without me these days. They're doing a splendid job with it. And I used to bring up Star Wars Galaxies all the time. And they hated me for it after a while, I think. Because the thing is, there's always so much stuff that people mention, like, oh, I wish this game had this, or I wish a game had that, or I miss this from the good old games. And it's always like, Star Wars Galaxies had that. I mean, do you guys understand what kind of game they shut down? SOE shut down?
So what did it have that modern MMOs lack?
Everything.
Could you be more specific? I mean, my recollection of it, I didn't play it much. I had a little go, but so having read about it, is that you could basically have a Wookiee strip dancer, which is like, yes. You know, like, it's just a bit kind of, that seemed a bit weird.
But the thing was, that's the thing. The main thing with Star Wars Galaxies, when it came to a lot of stuff like that, like personal expression in a video game, personal expression in an MMO, Star Wars Galaxies was incredible when it came to that. As you said, you could be a Wookiee strip dancer, or you really whatever. I remember somebody complaining about, oh, I could turn my Wookiee into a pink cyborg. And I failed to see the problem, because you totally could. You can replace his entire body with cybernetics, except his head, and turn it pink, and you're good to go.
I suppose it was a big universe, and there's plenty of weird-looking stuff in Star
exactly.
Wars, so...
We're dealing with a universe with millions of planets in the galaxy.
Yeah.
So there was that. There was a lot of freedom in how you wanted to look, how you wanted to dress, the way your character would look, and also, of course, you had non-human races to play, iconic Star Wars races to play that weren't human or weren't human-based. Like, looking at Star Wars The Old Republic, for example, you only have races that looks human, even though a lot of tattoos or what have you, but they're still human. And here you had, of course, you had humans, you had Sabraks and Twi'leks, but you also have races like the Ithorians and that don't look human at all, that are actually kind of ugly. And you could make those anyway. It didn't matter that it didn't look heroic or anything, whatever reason LucasArts used or BioWare used now to only have humans.
Okay, so you're saying that one of the good things about it was you could basically play what EVE players would call space Barbies.
Yes, you can. Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
Okay, and then I see how that might appeal.
There was the crafting, which was incredible. Every thing you dug up out of the ground, every mineral and stuff like that, had stats on them. And where they were placed in the world or on the planets from week to week would change, and the stats would change. So people would look to find the best kind of a material with the best kind of stats for whatever it was you wanted to do. And people, you put up these harvesters, and you harvest stuff out of the ground. And it's just...
So there was a whole industry and player-made items kind of thing.
Yes,
like
industry was... Crafting was really complicated. You'd put up factories. You'd make sure you had the right material. There were, of course, competition between crafters, because if you might have... Either you still have material left that had really high stats that you needed to make this gun, you could price it higher, but perhaps the materials high ad with lower stats on them. I could still make the same gun, but the statistics when it came out of it were different.
Oh, right. So it would pass through depending on the quality of the... Oh, that's Yeah, so it's a nice little... That's something that I wish they had in EVE, in that there was a little bit more personalisation to the, you know, the ships that, you know, if they could have a maker's mark and if you buy a ship from one particular vendor, it might just be a little bit, might have a couple of extra points of capacitor or something. That'd be great. Yeah. Okay, and Star Wars Galaxies had that.
Yeah, and there was a lot of crafting in it, which was completely pointless as well when it comes to stats. Everything is about stats. Everything is about the way you're supposed to use it, or weapons, or armor, or whatever. There was a lot of crafting in Star Wars Galaxies, only down to vanity stuff, like clothes. And then, of course, there was that goes into the housing system, which was non-instanced housing on planets. So you place down a house on a planet was actually there on the planet.
And so people could just break and enter.
Well, no, they couldn't. But you'd pass a building in the middle of nowhere on Tatooine, for example. You knew that a player placed them there. And if they allowed you to go in, you could go in and look around and see, okay, a player actually did this. And then you could create guild cities together with your friends, and you'd have actual cities. We had a huge one where you could put up vendors which sold your whatever stuff you crafted, and it was...
That sounds... Yeah, I mean, even now, I don't think there's much out there like that. I mean, sandbox-wise, EVE is probably one of the more popular sandboxes, but there's... You can stick up a pos, but that's it. There is some kind of player housing, but not particularly good, and CCP themselves admit that it needs some work. But is it similar, perhaps, to what Sony Online are trying to do with EQ Next and their landmark system? Does that address that itch?
Yeah, I think so. I still need to see exactly how it's going to work in when the game actually comes out. But yeah, it's similar in that idea that the houses you place were there. They were on the planets for all players to see. Not just instanced away somewhere in your own personal little universe, but actually they were there. Which made you took a different kind of pride in it. I mean, I love my virtual dollhouses and all the MMOs I play, from my house in EverQuest 2 to now in WildStar. And they're instanced, and nobody else can see them unless I really want them to. But so I still love them, but it was just something different actually having them in the world. And it did become a problem in Star Wars Galaxy with the kind of urban sprawl that slowly started to spread outside the cities, and it became a bit too big at times, and you run into random buildings all the time. But to me, that always felt like I knew it was a player who places there, and because I knew that, it was okay. And, of course, you had every item in the game. This was quite fantastic as well. Nobody's done it since, probably because it's a resource. It's madness when it comes to resources. Is that every item in the game had a 3D model?
Yeah, that's nice. I like that. I mean, I wish they'd... I wish they'd do it in EVE. They've done it with some bits, but not much.
Yeah, in EVE it wouldn't be much of a point. In World of Warcraft, for example, there's not much of a point to actually have a 3D model for every little thing. Like, if you had a... Let's say in World of Warcraft, if you have a potion, a health potion, that actually had a 3D model in Star Wars Galaxies. And what that meant was that it could be placed in the world, which meant you could place it in your house. So everything, for every smallest little crappy thing you owned, could be placed in the world.
So it essentially becomes a building block that you can use to decorate or...
Exactly.
I'm still slightly bothered that you couldn't then go to your next door neighbour and nick his potions or his lightsaber collection or something. I mean, I think that would have been a fantastic mechanic. And actually, that's what they should do. You're totally right. They should make every item in the game of EVE a 3D item that we can keep in our captain's quarters, and then we use our hacking skills to hack into each other's quarters and nick each other's stuff. Then you've got gameplay and walking in stations.
This is an EVE player.
Yeah?
Directly an EVE player goes, I want to steal that other guy.
Oh, well, yeah, but you can also have, like, security systems, can't you? And you can, like, set up some kind of cryptographic security system that people have to physically hack. You know, they can take their time because, you know, I don't know. And if you happen to be in at the time when the alarms go off, you can just electrocute them or something. I don't know. It's never going to happen. I'm dreaming. So, anyway, back to Star Wars Galaxies.
I'm not sure where we're going to keep on going. But it's stuff like that that actually made the game. It made it feel like it's one of those cliches, like feeling like a living, breathing world. And it actually really, really did. The way you just hung out, the progression was there, but it wasn't very important. Often I just hang out in our city, you know, running back and forth, just checking out what my guildmates had done, just tinkering around at my vendor. I sucked at crafting, so I sold low-level crap to people that actually come all the way out to us and go shopping. And I see people from other guilds just, you know, browsing the shops. And so is there a strong kind of community element then,
Well, it is still competitive, I suppose, because you're buying and selling, but in a sort of a non-PvP or non-kind of... it was emergent. Was it?
Yes,
it was
definitely.
Emergent gameplay.
The thing that I feel kind of sad when people release like sandbox MMOs now, like Ark is just coming, and of course there's Stalkfall, and what was it called? The robot one? And most of them are always... It tends to build around... Repopulation as well is coming.
Right.
Which Repopulation looks like it's going to be the spiritual successor to Star Wars Galaxies. But what they tend to do is add PvP everywhere. Because that's kind of emergent gameplay, where people start shooting at each other.
Hmm.
And what we had in Star Wars Galaxy, you had open world PvP, but you had to sign up for it. And
okay.
It still worked. I mean, we had, every now and then, a city would be attacked. Depending on who controlled it at the time, the rebels or the imperials, and all of a sudden you have these huge fights in the cities where standing outside the cities shooting in. You had AT-STs walking. Yeah, it was fantastic. You actually had AT-ATs there, AT-ATs just stand there. It's fantastic, and just complete utter chaos. And people would go there and they'd fight each other until somebody won, and then you just scatter and just or go hang out or whatever, and you don't have to have that PvP to create that sandbox feel. You don't have to be able to kill everyone all the time,
but it helps.
It helps.
I mean,
I think in a game like Eve Online would never work without it. But I think that many of the sandboxes that are being created now, I think they maybe could let off a bit on the constant PvP thing.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think the Arcade
virtual.
Actually, Arcade might actually be up your alley with stealing stuff from people.
I never said that I want to. I'm not a kleptomaniac or anything. It would be nice to have the choice. It would be nice. It's about having that ever-present threat. I'm thinking more in terms of keeping my stuff. You know, if I didn't undock or I didn't go out, I could just protect it and hoard my stuff all the time. You know, I want ways to protect against people stealing it. But I want that threat there because I think that makes a game feel more alive. It stops being a living, breathing experience if the game mechanics are protecting you in a way that is just not very believable. Oh, you can't shoot me. Why not? Well, because you haven't dueled me. So, it's just...
You're an Eve player. Most definitely.
I don't really do the PvP, but I like the fact that I'm flying through whatever bit of space and I have to keep my wits about me and keep an eye out. You know, I'm more about the avoidance, but I think if it was removed, it would make the experience more hollow.
Yeah.
So I do find that when I play other games, I just find it a little bit, you know, it's nice, it's pretty, it might be a great, well-crafted experience, but if there's no real danger other than what the AI is throwing at me, then I don't know, I think it loses something. But it obviously needs to be managed, because then you get people that just, like, you get mob rule, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Which is also pretty depressing if you're just a kind of a fairly slow solo player.
I think I'm going to add one final thing in.
Oh, yeah.
Just since I have this opportunity to actually rant about Star Wars Galaxies.
Go on, get it off your chest. This could become a thing.
Jump to Lightspeed.
Guest host rant.
Yeah, Jump to Lightspeed. Probably the best MMO expansion ever released. It was a space expansion for Star Wars Galaxies. And the space games was absolutely marvelous. It was flying around in outer space, dogfighting in outer space, picking up missions or fighting other players or exploring or what have you. And also, again, you actually have these ships are actually models in the sense that you could come visit me on my ship and I could fly around on my ship and you could be running around in it.
Cool.
While I was flying, while I was doing all the dogfighting stuff, you'd be on my ship and be able to walk around through the various rooms.
Sounds well ahead of its time. So where's the rent?
I just want to say how incredible that was. There was a dungeon called the Lost Star Destroyer, or the Derelict Star Destroyer, I can't remember. But it's a Star Destroyer which had been taken over by some renegade faction of the Empire. And to get to it, you had to get in one of the player's ships, who would then fly underneath the Star Destroyer and into the docking bay underneath. So you have one player who's actually steering the ship, and he's just looking out through the screen. But the rest of us just standing around behind him, actually seeing this transpire in front of us. And it's just nobody's done it since. And
that makes no sense to me. Why, if this was so unique, and it sounds amazing, and it's obviously got a place in your heart. So why did it die? What happened?
Two things happened. First of all, many, many years ago, there were the combat updates and the new game enhancements. And while I now, towards the end of the game's lifespan, would defend the game that it did become in the end, at the time, they really messed that up. You had this kind of a unique progression thing where you had this starter classes, but you could build your own class and get various, you could more or less put together your own type of character if you wanted to be a marksman, artisan, or in whatever. You could just pick and choose.
Or a Wookiee lap dancer.
And then they changed that and just made it into the typical. They felt the heat from LucasArts that they wanted a World of Warcraft. And World of Warcraft, of course, has that 1 to 90 level progression, or 1 to 60 as it was back then. And so they changed it overnight, and that was not well received. And that gave the game a really bad name, which it lived with until the end of its. Until the day they shut it down and lived with that really bad reputation.
I recall the press. Was it the new game experience or something?
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't a good time. And I know friends of mine who were still bitter about it years and years after the fact and refused to come back.
But like you!
Unlike me. No, but I wasn't there. So I actually started, the only reason I started playing Star Wars Galaxies was like an experiment just to see, is the game really as bad as they say? I'm now going to spend the next 30 days with it. I'm going to pick it up and I'm going to spend 30 days with it. And I ended up spending over 2 years with it. But the second thing, the thing is that towards the end of the game's lifespan, it had become a lot better. The developers were making some really good stuff. I mean, they've been overhauling all the classes, and then when it was announced that we're shutting down, they moved stuff from the test server to live just to have people play around with it, and they actually added atmospheric flight, which was you could now take your ships down to the planets and fly around over the planets with them. And it was a really good community. I mean, Farstar, which the server I was on, was packed with people. There was a lot of servers that were ghost towns. But we had a pretty good community. I'm sure they made money out of it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have stuck it around as long as they had. But then Star Wars The Old Republic came along.
And that was
what happened was either that LucasArts says, no, sorry, SOE, you're not getting the license anymore, because we only want one MMO set in Star Wars. Or they hiked the price to the license, probably because you just wanted one game. And SOE couldn't pay it anymore. So, yeah.
But they weren't that similar, other than the fact they both used the Star Wars IP.
Completely,
opposite ends of the theme park sandbox spectrum.
Yeah, completely different.
But it's interesting, though, taking what you've just said and applying that to Eve. There's a hell of a lot of parallels I see there. Their NGE mishap, their managerial mistakes or whatever, could be seen as sort of their incarnate moment, and then you're saying that, but then they kind of recovered like Eve did, and then they went through a lot of rebalancing and kind of fostered a lot of people started to see strength and value in that. But then a competitor came along, and that combined with the flailing history and the other problems resulted in it being put down.
Yeah, The whole incarnate NG thing is actually something that John Smedley, president of SOE, himself says. He mentioned it to us when we were he's an E player.
Mm-hmm.
So he was at FanFest. So we did an interview with him, for the movie. Yes, he's in there. And he actually mentioned that on it, not prompted by me or anything. I didn't bring up. I tried to, like, I'm not going to talk about Star Wars Galaxies with this guy. I'm not going to talk. So he actually mentioned it himself, and I think also when you look at, he's done a couple of Reddit, like Ask Me Anythings on Reddit, and whenever people bring up NG, he's always very, very humble and always say that was the biggest mistake of his career, and that they'd never do it again, it was horrible. But the Incarna NG thing, yes, he definitely used
it. He made a parallel. But then I'm thinking about the period of time since. If you're saying that they did start to look like they were green shoots and they were recovering from it, they did a lot of rebalancing in Star Wars Galaxies, as they've done in Eve, and they tried to change things in such a way to make it more appealing again, to keep their core player base but make it appealing to new players or returning players, which does mm-hmm. seem to be an uncanny similarity to the path that Eve has taken over the last 4 or 5 years. So, and it's interesting now that I don't know. I hope that lessons from others can be learned by CCP, and perhaps that's what we are seeing with the shift in sands now. Maybe we're seeing the response that will help them weather the storm of the coming competition.
Yeah, but I think one of the big differences is that I think that SOE back in the day, when the entire CUNG thing happened, I don't think they were actually very humble. And that's what, at least on the outside, and what CCP's done after all that stuff happened, they were actually pretty humble.
Mm.
And they changed direction, for example, with the expansion that came straight after that, like Crucible. And I don't think SOE actually did that kind of damage control.
Right.
Now, the game picked up on its own, but it never became what it had once been.
Right, it became toxic to an extent, and they never really recovered from that.
Exactly. Which I think that CCP's managed to at least turn that around. There's still, of course, a lot of grumbling.
I wouldn't say that Eve isn't toxic. I think one famous former dev has described the community as exactly that, but I think it's meant to be that way. There's a difference between Eve and Star Wars Galaxies, I think, is that I see the community as kind of a public service. It's a containment facility for the most Machiavellian, psychotic and evil players, so they're not playing the other nicer games. Not that that's everyone. I don't want to tire everyone with the same brush. There's some lovely people in Eve. There's some perfectly nice, trustworthy people. But uh-huh. I just don't know which ones they are.
You can trust me.
Right.
Send me your money.
Yeah, and you'll double it. Right. On that note, I think we're coming to the end of the podcast. How do you finish a podcast, Petter? You're the expert.
You should say, we're about to finish. Okay, see you guys later. Bye-bye.
All right.
That's usually what we do.
Like what he said. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Up, live there up to the up, up, and then down to the up, down. Waterloo and defying the ground. They're all rightfully keen, those magnificent men in their flying machines. They can fly upside down with their feet in the air. They don't think of danger, they really don't care. Newton would think he had made a mistake to see those young men and the chances they take. Those magnificent men in their flying machines, they go up to the up-up, they go down to the up-down. They enchant all the ladies and steal all the scenes with their up to the up-up and their down to the up-down. Up, down, flying around, looping the loop and defying the ground. They're all frightfully keen, those magnificent men in their flying machine. Those magnificent men in their flying machine, they go up to the up-up, they go down to the up-down. Magnificent men, those magnificent men, those magnificent men.